Cozy Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate.
Kia ora and welcome to our Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation, and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our center, our programs, social justice, different cultures, interfaith, and ecumenism. Today, my visitor is Reverend Lynn Wall. Lynn, a warm welcome and hi to our radio program.
Thank you.
Reverend Lynn Wall has been a Methodist minister for nearly 40 years. And during that time, she has worked in parish ministry as a teacher of biblical studies at Trinity Methodist Theological College and Auckland University, and more recently as a police chaplain in South Auckland. Lynn, during these last weeks, we heard a lot about ecumenism and interfaith relations. I believe that you've been involved in this kind of building bridges between people of different denominations for faith for quite some time. What do you think about it?
Well, I quite enjoy this kind of working with people from other denominations or from other faiths. Particularly when I was teaching, I used to teach Hebrew, so I would take my students along to a local synagogue and we would listen to a service of worship in Hebrew and talk to the congregation afterwards. It just helped students to realize that this is a living language and that people use Hebrew and that they can learn different things about themselves and their faith when they listen to the way in which a language is being used in other faiths. Also, ecumenically, I'm a Methodist. Most of our Methodist people are in either union or cooperating parishes. And so they've got to get to know people who worship differently, perhaps have a different history. And I think that's the main thing with ecumenism. Most of the church's differences are historical. They come from things that happened in the past that may or may not be relevant today. So that if we study our past, if we look at the historical development of each denomination, helps us to understand why we're different, why we worship in different ways, have different differences in belief. Usually they're minor. When you actually come to work together and there are dialogues going on, either nationally or locally, but also internationally, so that can help us to understand one another. And they put out papers, so that also can be used as a resource for people to work together to understand why we're different.
And maybe when you mentioned the roots, when you're looking back at the roots and the history, I think as every denomination is developing, there are changes. So maybe some of the differences they used to exist don't exist anymore.
Exactly, yes. So I went along to the service for the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, and you suddenly hear Catholics and Lutherans talking about their faith and worshipping together. And it was so easy. There was nothing there to stop other denominations, such as myself, joining in the worship and realizing that, yes, historically there was a huge chasm at the Reformation, but since then we've started to draw closer together, and especially since the Second Vatican Council in the Catholic Church, that's really helped. So I enjoyed that service immensely, yes.
Yeah. Well, it was a service, so at the Mass that's still the problem, but the service is okay.
Yes.
And I think that the cooperation is really good.
Yes. And the Pope said this is the beginning. We had a special message from the Pope because it's 50 years since the Methodist Roman Catholic dialogue began. And he's saying, this is the first step. This is the beginning. We'll keep working and hopefully we'll get to the stage where we can share the Eucharist and Mass together.
Mm. So the Catholic Pope also reaches the Methodists.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. They had an audience with him, the international dialogue team. And there was a New Zealander there, which was great.
Yeah. So I remember a few years ago, the Methodists and the Catholics shared a song.
Oh, right, yes.
Or a church hymn.
We went to a special service, I think it was in Ponsonby.
Yes, in Ponsonby, yes. Sacred Heart Church.
And then we all, both denominations brought their music to share with one another. It was great. It was a wonderful service.
So we said we sang all together the Methodist song that the Methodist donated, more or less, or gifted to the to the hymns in the Catholic Church, and the Catholics. I remember that we sang Mo Maria.
Ah, yes, yeah. I think that's the way to look at ecumenism. To say, what have we got to share with one another? What treasures has each denomination got that they would like to share with the others? And for Methodists, music's really important. Methodism is apparently born in song, we say. And particularly Charles Wesley, John Wesley's brother, has written many wonderful hymns. You think of Christmas carols like Hark the Herald Angels Sing. Wesleyan hymn. So we share that with the whole church, and everyone sings that at Christmas.
Isn't it beautiful to say that your church is built of songs? It's rooted in songs.
Yes, yeah.
And you said you are a Methodist minister, so you're not just a Methodist and involved in ecumenism, but you did the training to become a minister. Mm-hmm. So what drew you to becoming a minister?
I think when I was a child, I was the kind of child who wanted to go to Sunday school. I was the religious one, if you like, in my family. So I've always been drawn towards God. I've always felt a relationship with God. And as a child, I wanted to be a missionary. And I used to draw up lists of things I would need if I was to go to be a missionary, what I would take with me. Then as I grew older, I think things started to mature in my faith when I was at university, and it was there I met my husband, Terry, and he was very clear that he had a call from God for ministry in the Methodist Church. And so we were married, and we were both teachers to start with, and then his call was tested by the church. We went to theological college, and I just did the study out of interest, was what how I put it. And it was true. I was very interested in the study.
So you studied together?
Yes, yeah. But mine, I just did it, not the ordination part of it, but the academic study. Part of Terry's study was he won a World Council of Churches scholarship to America, and we went to Chicago for 1 year. And it was when I was in America that I saw different models of ministry. Back in New Zealand, women had been ministers in New Zealand since 1957, which was when Reverend Phyllis Guthard trained for the ministry, but they were single women or widowed women. I didn't know any women who were married or were looking to have a family, and I thought, how would this work? How could one be both a minister, a mother, and a wife at the same time?
So it's also the Methodist Church.
Yes, so when we're in America, all sorts of exciting things are happening over there in the 70s. And I saw couples in ministry. I saw people working campus ministry together with a parish ministry, all of that kind of thing. And I actually felt the call of God for me personally when I could see possibilities for how we might work together. So I candidated, that's applied for ministry, from America, and was accepted. That was an unusual step. That's not the usual way to do things. At that point, I'd done some of the study. I also had done some pastoral work. I did a university hospital chaplaincy course at Billings Hospital in Chicago, which blew my mind because it was just a huge city hospital with all sorts of things, gunshot wounds, murders, enormous tragedy and suffering in a big city like Chicago. So I then gained some confidence in pastoral skills. And when we returned to New Zealand, we shared a parish together. So that was something new. And we did half time each. Our first child was born in the second year of ministry. And then we had two other daughters. And all that time we shared one position between us. We started off separately. The church wasn't so keen on that to start with, but in the second year we combined. And then gradually we diverted into different forms of ministry. My husband was a university chaplain. I became a teacher. So, yes, that's how it's happened.
Amazing. For those of you who've just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/Muffin Talk or visit our website or Facebook page at Tengaka Waiora Mercy Spirituality Center. Today my visitor is Reverend Lynn Wall, and she's just explained of how she became a minister. And as I said in my introduction, Lynn is a police chaplain. So her husband is a university chaplain, or was a university chaplain, and you're a police chaplain. Can you tell us more about this kind of ministry?
Yes. When I retired, I was sort of looking around what other ministry I might be involved in.
So you'd retired in teaching?
Yes, in teaching. And a friend said to me, well, how about police chaplaincy? That's something that I've been doing alongside parish ministry. So it's a part-time work. And I thought that might just suit me. One of the other things that I'd been thinking about at the time, this was in 2009, there was a constable, a senior constable, Leonard Snee from Napier, who was shot and killed doing a warrant for a search warrant in Napier. And the man, I think he was deranged at the time, but that sent shockwaves through New Zealand. At that stage, we hadn't had that kind of thing happen for a long time. And I thought to myself, I wonder who cares for Reverend Constable Snee's family. And I began to think about the police, the dangers that they face, and wondering what sort of network of care was there for them. So that tied in with my friend saying to me, have you thought about this as another sort of ministry? So, that was basically what happened.
And now you've been in that position for a while, for a few years?
Yes. You might know about how I came to actually be one.
Yes.
I applied through my friend who was the link chaplain in charge of a district. And so he said there's a vacancy in County's Manukau West area, which includes Otahuhu, Mangere and the airport. He said, would you be interested in applying for that? So I did, and the way in which it happens, you need to have the support of your church and to know that you're in good standing with your church, which mine were happy to do. Then there was an interview with police, and also this link chaplain was present, and they ask questions to try to find out if you're the kind of person they're looking for. For instance, one of the questions was about how would you cope with having police staff who are of different faiths. And I said that would be no problem. I wouldn't be able to offer particular faith help, but I'd be able to refer if I needed to. And then I was quite happy to engage in conversation with anyone, whether they had a faith or no faith. So that's part of chaplaincy, is to be available to all.
Mm. And have many police men and women approached you in these years?
Yes. It's just over 7 years now, so I started in 2010. And I've found that one needs to get to know people. So I spend my time visiting the stations, getting to know the staff. It's easier to get to know the staff who sit at desks than those who are out on the front line. But sometimes I go to lineups, you know, when they start their shifts, and I just say who I am and introduce myself, and some of them will remember me from last time or not. And then people contact me. I have a card. They can either text me or email me, and they might say, I'd like to talk to you about something, but I don't want to meet you at the station. So we'll arrange to have coffee, or I might go to someone's home if that suits them. So that's the kind of way in which I keep in touch with people.
And then people refer to you also if somebody has a problem or doesn't even know that it would be good to talk to somebody. Mm. Then there would be maybe a colleague who would say, have you thought about contacting Reverend Lynn Wall?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes that happens. Or I might get a referral from a senior member saying, I wonder if you'd like to have a chat with so-and-so. They've been going through a tough time. Maybe somebody in the family is really sick, something like that, or a personal matter. Then I would just send an email or text saying, would you like to talk? And it's up to them whether they respond to that. But most contacts that I have are made by the person themselves. They'll just send me a message. I had one last week. Someone texted me and said, could you give me your email? I want to talk to you about something, but I want to put it, I want to give you a bit more information before we meet. So that's what's happened there.
Mm. Is there, in these 7 years, is there anything that sticks out, a positive or negative or a strange example?
I was thinking back a few years back, one of the constables was away overseas and got into a difficult situation and died overseas as a result of that. His colleagues back here were totally shocked. They could not understand how this could have happened. And the area commander for Counties Manukau West said, would you come with me? I'm going to go and meet with this team and it would be good if you were there. So the commander and I sat down with the team that he worked with and we just talked. We talked about who he was, the kind of gifts he had and the way in which he contributed and how they were going to cope without him, and just generally listening to their feelings, which were mainly shock and horror at what had happened. And because this was a Polynesian, mainly Polynesian team, most of those people were church people. They had a link to different churches in South Auckland, and we could pray. So I led prayer for the group. Now, that doesn't always happen. It's not always overtly spiritual. Sometimes it's just a matter of talking over issues with people. Particularly, I find people find death hard to cope with and grief. And the police, that's part of their work, going to motor accidents or conveying news to a family that someone has died or been killed. And those are very hard situations and none of us deal easily with those kinds of things. So I like to put that kind of thing into a human context. Whether they want to use religious language, I'm prepared to talk with them at a human level about what this does to us, the way in which it might change us and the way in which we need to deal with it in some way. Talking is often good.
And do you also help preparing police men and women when they have never been to a family to give a bad notice, for example? Do you help them before they get into the situation?
Not officially, you know, not on their course, which is down in Wellington, but when they come here into an area that they're going to be working in, they have an orientation course. And we chaplains are always invited to go along and talk to them about what we offer in the way of support and a confidential listening ear. And that's always important because we're not in the system, the police system, but we're integrally linked to the welfare part of the police, we can say that they can come and talk to us about anything. We're available, but it's confidential. And even if we felt we needed to tell someone within the organisation, we'd never do it without consulting them. So that seems a pretty important thing.
Mm. How many police chaplains are there?
Well, over the country, at least 50. In our area, in Counties Manukau, we have 5, and they're geographically placed. Central Manurewa, the hub, which is another central station near the courts in Manukau City. I'm in west, as I said, Otahuhu and Māngere in the airport. There's east, dealing with Ormiston Road Station and the eastern suburbs, Howick. Then there's south, Papakura, and Pukekohe.
Yes.
And so if a policeman or woman would like to talk to somebody and decides, well, I work in this and this area, but I'd really connect better to this and this police chaplain, is there freedom to go wherever they like, or do they have to go to exactly the person who's in that area?
That's a good question, because we've actually got a poster with all our pictures and names on it, and we're quite diverse in denomination, gender, and also when you look at Polynesian and different groups, probably got a few more Pākehā than we need. We could do with a few more Polynesian or even Indian and Asian officers, because our County's Manukau is probably the most diverse police district in the country. So we're always trying to work at those things. Mm. And people may choose, and that doesn't bother us at all. I once had a call from someone who said, I've got to know my police chaplain really well, and I don't want to talk to him about this. Would you mind if I talk to you about it? Because I don't know you so well, and I'd feel a bit more comfortable if it was with someone that I didn't know quite so well. So people have different reasons, and if they feel drawn to one or other of the other chaplains, we work well as a team. We're not worried by that sort of thing if they want to choose someone else.
Yeah. So, some months ago, I interviewed Hans Flapper, who has been working as a prison chaplain, and you're working as a police chaplain. Are the police chaplains connecting somehow with the prison chaplains, or is it completely separate?
It is a separate ministry. But I find that often people confuse me with a prison chaplain, and they think I go into the prisons, and I say, no, I'm a chaplain to the police rather than to the prisons. However, there are opportunities for contact. For instance, last Friday, I belonged to the police choir, and we were going to go into one of the prisons. This time it was Wiri Women's Prison, where Tina Cross was running a workshop for women, particularly in regard to family violence, and trying to use music as a way of developing people's confidence and helping them to be the person they really are. And so we went in to sing with the choir, then we each did separate items, and it was just a way of connecting and saying, actually, the police are human beings. You know, those who are police officers were in uniform. And so they just get a different vision from being in prison and perhaps having been apprehended by the police, obviously, when they went to court and so on, to see that, yes,
but they also need support.
They also need support. Yeah. They have the same problems. They enjoy singing just like we do. So that was a good link, I think.
I think that's a great idea. And as a good Methodist, you are in the choir.
Yes, the singing.
And what do you consider your challenges and chances in this very special ministry?
I think just the sheer number of officers to get to know, and staff members, and the fact that in the police people are always moving. They're getting different skills, they're moving to different departments, sometimes they're on the front line, then they'll go somewhere into intel maybe, or some other department. And so there's a lot of variety, a lot of change in their work. So you might just get to know someone and suddenly they've moved to a different area. However, I've been there long enough now that people are coming back who I used to know 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago, and there they are again. So that's a bit of a challenge. And the other thing is people's discomfort sometimes with the chaplain. I always put that down, and it's not often, but just every now and again, people obviously are heads down into their computer. They don't want to talk to you. I think to myself, well, who knows what past experience they've had? Maybe it's not been a good experience in the church for them, and they're not interested. And that's okay. I can accept that. And I just gradually say, hi, so-and-so, how's it today? And move on. I don't try to prolong things. That's some of the challenges. I think sometimes the joys of it can be good as well. It's very satisfying to meet with people and help them through on their journey. Also, there are the celebrations. I've conducted two weddings of police officers. Enjoyed that immensely. Another thing that we get involved in are blessings. I once had a phone call from the police. It was one of the liaison officers, Maori liaison officer, who said there's been an accident near one of the streets in Māngere, near this person's house, but also there was a school opposite. Many people saw this accident and were shocked by what had happened. And it was a fatal accident. So the driver died at the scene. Could you come along and do a blessing? So I said, yes, it's just the kind of thing that we like to do. And so I was able to go along, talk to the owner of the house where the car had run into a tree right outside their house. And after we'd had a conversation, we drew people who were around together for just a brief service of blessing of the place, just to try to ease people's pain at what had happened. And also...
It's like a bit unlifting a tapu.
Lifting a tapu, but I wasn't doing that. The Maori pastor was doing that. And we did that also when we built the new station at Otahuhu. The cell blocks of the old building, we lifted tapu from those. And I followed the Maori kaumātua who did that work and said prayers and so on.
That sounds great. Mm. Thank you very much, Reverend Lynn. That's really, I think it's great work. And I hope that you'll have many, many more years to work with the police. And as you say, you get to know them and they get to know you. And who knows how many weddings you're still going to celebrate.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity of sharing what I do and reminding people out there that the police need support in the same way that everyone does.
Yes, humans as everybody
else.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And just for what is some information about what is coming up in our Mercy Spirituality Center. Well, after the popular talks with Dr. Nick Thompson on the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, we'll have one more talk focusing on the Reformation, and that's on the 30th of November from 10 to 12 noon. And this is the talk about the Cathedral of Bautzen, a talk that I have given in June and in July. And it is about a church that has been used by the Catholic and Lutherans for 500 years, which is quite special. On Wednesday, the 15th of November, from 7 to 9 p.m., we have Deacon Danny Karatea Gotthard, who will come to our center and give a presentation with the title, God Speaks to Me in Māori. He will help us looking at the story of the coming of the Word and Christianity through Māori eyes. And also, you might know, our program booklets 2018 have arrived. They have come back from the printer, and we are sending them out this week. In case you haven't received your personal copy, please let us know and either pick it up at our center or we'll send it to you. For all events at our center, please register with us per phone at 09-638-6238 or via our website at www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. I wish you all a good Friday and a blessed week. And thank you, Lynn, for coming here.
Thank you, Beata.
It is me.